Today we're going to learn a Rashi about the garments of the Kohen Gadol. We will see that Rashi focuses on a particular piece of information and gives us two explanations for it. The Rebbe will want to know why two explanations. And from that we're going to learn an interesting perspective on halacha and a great take-home lesson that is relevant to each of us. When it comes to the instruction that they had to make the me'il, the long flowing garment of the Kohen Gadol, it says, "Ksiv." The Torah tells us, "Sofa yir lefiv saviv ma'ase oireg v'sachra yir loy lo yikorea," that it should have this very strong woven hem around it, almost like the same design as armor, and lo yikorea, it shall not tear. Rashi means Rashi tells us that that's teaching us two things. Number one, the purpose of the hem is, why do you have the hem? So that it doesn't tear. And it teaches us that should a person by choice decide to tear this item, you've actually transgressed the mitzvah of the Torah. We'll talk about that more in detail shortly. But straight away there's a question. We need to move on. Mimash kosav Rashi b'tchilas pirushay. The moment that Rashi tells us that the words lo yikorea means it should be designed in this way so as not to tear, so moving then shelo yikorea inyan v'tzivei bifnei atzmai, then it's pretty clear that lo yikorea is not an instruction, it's an explanation. Why do you put this kind of a hem so that it won't easily tear? So that's the reason, not now an instruction. So for Yilepiv Goimer Kifisachro Goimer. Sorry, Alan Asinas Tam Alakosivli Ilmine, so for Yilepiv Goimer Kifisachro Kadei Shalai Korea. So in other words, it's giving us an explanation. Why do you have to have this unusually strong hem in order that the Me'il does not tear? Now, if that's true, Vim came. Maushoisif Rashi Bem Shachlaze, Uba Vava Moisif, Ve Hakoiro, Uve Belav. Asha Pise, Tavis Loi Korea, Hein Loinesinasta, Meletziva, Ilav, Vifneatsmoi. So why then does Rashi look like he's changing opinion? First, he says, Loi Korea means that the Torah is now giving me an explanation for the design. That's it, I understand what it means. Then Rashi says, Ve, and it's actually giving an instruction. Now, which one is it? Is it telling us an explanation why there should be that hem? Or is it giving us an instruction to make sure that we don't rip the me'il? And in a moment, we're going to see that it's actually quite a serious question. The question is a lot more surprising than we would have thought, because if you have a look in the Gemara Issa, the Gemara in Yuma, obviously, which talks about the Kohen Gadol, so it talks about the garments of the Kohen Gadol, says as follows. So there's an opinion in the Gemara that says that if a person tears the me'il, then they have transgressed, and not just the me'il, it says big de kahuna, any of the garments of the Kohen, they have transgressed a negative commandment of the Torah. Maskif lo Rav Acha bar Yaakov, so the Gemara has Rav Acha bar Yaakov pose a logical question. V'dilme hochi kom rachmona navid leisofa ki heichi delo nikra. Why are you reading Lo Yikorea as an instruction that you dare not rip the garment? Maybe Lo Yikorea is just telling you practically, make sure that it's done well, that it's woven properly, so it shall not tear. So you see, they are mutually exclusive opinions. Either you say that Lo Yikorea is advice, good advice, design it well that it doesn't rip, like Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov, or you say, like Rechavam Rabbi Yehuda, that it is an instruction, do not tear. Anyhow, the Gemara rejects Rav Acha bar Yaakov and says, "Mi kasiv she lo yikorea." How can you suggest that lo yikorea is an explanation, a motivation, why it's designed in a particular way? Then the Torah would have said, she, in order that it doesn't tear. And it doesn't say that, it says, lo yikorea. But what's relevant to us is, v'hainu shapirsh b'lo yikorea, ki heichi delo nikra, hu bistir lepirsh shuhu lav. It's pretty clear from the Gemara that these are two contradictory views. Either you see Lo Yikorea as an explanation for the design, or you see Lo Yikorea as an instruction not to rip the garment. But it's not both. They are mutually exclusive. And in fact, for exactly this reason, if you look at the various commentaries on the Torah, you're going to see that they are in two camps. יש מפורשים שלא יקרא רק נסינה סתם עד לילמיני, ויש מפורשים שאולה בפני עצמו. That's why some of the commentaries understand לא יקרא as an explanation, motivation, why the design of the meal includes this hem, whereas others say, no, לא יקרא means it's an instruction, do not rip the Kohen Gadol's clothes. ואם כן תמוה, איך צירף רשי שני פירושים הופכים לפירוש אחד? So here's a big question. How does Rashi take two contradictory views and roll them into one commentary with a V and connector in between? How does Rashi get there? Then Rashi continues. בהמשך דברי רשי שם. Rashi then continues. שזה ממניין לבין שבתורה. Now we're going to learn that lo yikorea, the fact that you may not rip the Kohen Gadol's clothing, specifically the me'il, but by extension all of his clothing, is one of the 365 negative commandments on the Torah. It's on the list. And once he says that, Rashi adds, v'chein v'lo yizach ha'choshen, likewise the prohibition that the choshen should not move, so it's got to be strapped to the Kohen Gadol's shoulders and then around his waist, v'lo yizach, and it shall not move, says Rashi, not only is that an explanation, it's one of the 365 negative commandments, not to shift the choshen off its special place on the Kohen Gadol's chest. V'chein v'lo yosur mimena anema bebadei ha'oren, and likewise in the previous parasha, Truma, where it spoke about the poles that were inserted in the sides of the Aron to carry it, says the Torah, lo yosuru, you can't remove them, or they may not be removed, says Rashi, it's also on the list of 365 negative commandments. So, bepashtus nira, shekavonas Rashi, bohi sofash zemiminin lavin shebetorah, why does Rashi feel it necessary to now tell us that it's on the list of forbidden mitzvahs in the Torah? Why? He lehovi raya, shelo yikare, ahu lav, so why is Rashi doing it? He said, well, look, when we first saw these words, lo yikarea, as I told you myself in the commentary, the first natural explanation for this is, it's an explanation. Why have a hem so it doesn't rip? Now I have to teach you something in addition to that. Not only is it a reason to have the hem, it is also to place this on the list of forbidden transgressions that, God forbid, somebody tears the Kohen Gadol's garment, he's broken a law. Ve'ine muvan. If that's the case, it really doesn't make sense. Haloi pirush Rashi miyused al pshutei shel mikra. Let's be honest. We know that Rashi's primary focus is to explain and understand the simplest understanding of the verses in the Torah. Minlayin the Rashi mipashas haksuvim shelo yikare u'miminyan lavin shebetorah. Where is there any indication in the pshat, the simple reading of the text, that indicates that this is one of the 613 mitzvahs, or more specifically, one of the 365 negative mitzvahs? In fairness, we do know that previously Rashi has commented on the list, whether something is or is not on the list of mitzvahs in the Torah. So it's not out of the range of what he would discuss. And obviously, if Rashi has previously discussed the notion of a mitzvah belonging to or not belonging to the list of mitzvahs, that means that it is something which is relevant to and can be derived from the pshat. Fine. But there doesn't seem to be any clear, specific indicator that this mitzvah, as you read it in the line, in the pasuk, has to necessarily mean that the Torah is telling me it's on the list of 365. So where does Rashi get it from? But Yosem Mizeinim Muvan, Sim Pirish Rashi. The truth is, once we're analyzing this, the last part of Rashi's commentary really does not seem to make sense. When he starts to talk about the law of the choshen, that it may not move off the Kohen Gadol's chest, and the law of the poles, that they may not leave the sides of the Aron. Why are we talking about this? Why is it relevant here? So most of the commentaries on Rashi will tell you, because what Rashi needs to do is to show how it is possible and common even in the Torah to have one phrase that means both a restriction, don't do it, and an explanation, it's practical. So put this hem so you don't accidentally rip the garment, and you should know, therefore, that you're not allowed to rip the garment. Same concept with these two psukim. מפני שגם בפסוקים אלה הפירוש הפשוט בבלו יזח ולא יסורו הוא כדי שלא יזח, כדי שלא יסורו. מקומו כמאלו הן לבן בפני עצמן, נמנים במניין הלבן. So Rashi can say, look, same thing happened with the choshen. It's practical that you tie the choshen down so it doesn't move all over the place. Plus, there's a restriction. Don't actively move the choshen because that's not allowed. Likewise, you keep the poles inside the oren so it's easy to carry. Plus, there's a prohibition that you may not remove those poles. So Rashi's creating a thread, according to the Meforshim of Rashi, he's creating a thread. Here are other examples to support my commentary here, that the words lo yikorea don't only mean this is why we have such a hem, but they also extend to prohibit tearing a garment of a Kohen Gadol. That's how they explain it. Ve'nemuvan. The explanation isn't sufficient. First and foremost, just as we asked, where does Rashi see in the words lo yikorea or any of the other words of the text an indication that we need to know that this is one of the 365 negative commands? You don't see it in the language. So you also don't see it in the language of lo yizach and lo yasuru. But besides that, בפסוקים ולא יזח ולא יסורו, לפירש רשי על השר שיש במסין הסתם וגם לאו בפני עצמו. Now is where it gets really interesting. These expressions about the choshen and specifically about the aron, because that was already last week's parasha, Rashi doesn't talk about the fact that they have dual meanings, that they indicate both a reason, a logical reason for the law and a restriction that if you do it, you transgress. Which means that either way you look at it, it doesn't make sense. Im yeshno koishi lefarish lo yikorea hein ketam vehein kelav. Hoya al rashi lefarizay salasabi psukim lo yosuru v'lo yizach amurim koidim lochein. If fundamentally it's problematic to use one phrase to explain two different things, so the one phrase will both be a rational explanation for a particular instruction, and it will also be a listing that this is one of the transgressions. If that's something which is difficult to understand and it's uncommon, then Rashi should address it each time it appears. And certainly the first time it appears, lo yasuru in the previous parasha, and he doesn't. V'im svirilei the Rashi shein koshe b'pirish zev v'adir abazir pirish poshut kol kach shein Rashi tzorich leforish mi'uma shekein ha-ben chomesh yamed al kach b'yatzmoy. And if on the other hand, Rashi believes that actually the possibility of this phrase meaning both things is so obvious, I don't even have to tell you, the five-year-old child who's learning this, I don't even have to just mention it. So then, madu hutzach Rashi lashmienu zois b'posik didan v'af lohovi rayis l'pirushoy. So then why does Rashi have to suddenly tackle it now in our posuk? Either it's a common way of the Torah speaking, in which case it never needs to be explained, or it is an uncommon way of the Torah speaking, in which case it always has to be explained. And Rashi seems to be straddling the middle over here. A little bit of both. There he doesn't explain it, here he does explain it. All right, let's go back to our first question. So what was our first question? How can Rashi quote two different and actually contradictory explanations of a single concept? Let's tackle that one first. So the commentators on Rashi point out, with regards to the first question, that the fi pshutei shel mikra oyle lecha'era shelo yikorea v'chein v'lo yizach v'lo yosuru einei tzivoy el nesin astam al omer ilmine. If I were to read a pasuk, any pasuk that had the kind of language we're seeing in this pasuk, I would have automatically assumed that it means I'm giving an explanation. So make a hem around the me'il, lo yikorea, logically, oh, now I know why I have to make a hem. Tie down the choshen, lo yizach, oh, now I know why you tie down the choshen, so it doesn't move. That would be the most logical way to read the pasuk, except for one detail in this one. But if the full intention of the pasuk was that these words lo yikorea serve only as a logical explanation why you need the hem, then the language, as the Gemara over there in Yuma asked, the language should have been she. So have this hem she in order that lo yikorea it won't tear. But that's not what happens. In all three cases, the Torah does not say she lo yikorea, she lo yizach, she lo yosuru. So each time that it said like almost a fresh phrase, first you tell me the design of the me'il, and then you tell me it shouldn't tear. First you tell me the tying of the choshen, and then you tell me it shouldn't move. Just that nuance in the language, the lack of the letter shin, is a hint. And it's important to know that it's a hint, it's not clear. It's a hint in the Torah that there's a dual explanation here. Aleph, Pashtus, Mashmois, Akosim, Nesinas, Tamal, Omer, Li'il. The first obvious way to read it is as an explanation for the instruction we were given. And Beis, Tzivo, Lo, Yikorea, secondly, over and above. And in addition to that, also the prohibition and the warning that if you actually don't do this or don't follow these instructions, you will transgress. So that's how the commentaries explain it. There's that nuance of the missing shin that allows the phrase to be translated in two different directions. So good, we'll put that to bed. But there's still a very big question. Why did Rashi wait until the third example to start to explain it? If these principles apply already to previous examples, surely he should have tackled them when those earlier examples arose. Now that's strange, and it's definitely not the way Rashi usually does things. So Abir Bozer, the explanation works as follows. Al derech ha-pshat yesh lefoyer shelo yosuru velo yizoch einom nesinas ham ela rak tzivoy velav bifnei atzmoy. The reason is because at the face of it, when you first read lo yizoch, don't move the choshen, you first would have read it as an instruction, actually. It's not so compelling that it was written as an explanation for the design of how the choshen sits on the body. You would have read it as an instruction, just whatever you do, don't move the choshen. And definitely, when it comes to the poles that are used to carry the aron, there definitely lo yosuru sounds much more like an instruction than an explanation. Why do you have to have poles in the aron so that they're not removed? Doesn't make sense. It's like an instruction. Don't remove them. And of course, we have the added dimension that the Torah should have said she. So when I read those first two, I assume, I don't know any better, I assume that just giving me an instruction, don't do this, don't move the choshen, don't remove the poles of the aron. Now you might say, but if it's a direct instruction, why is it not directed to the second person, right? You don't move the choshen. In Hebrew, the language would be quite distinct. Instead of lo yizach, it shall not be moved, it should have said lo taziach, you do not move the choshen. Instead of saying lo yosuru, the poles of the aron should not be taken out of the aron, it should have said lo tasuru, you should not, or lo tisireim, you should not move them. So that's the only reason why there might be like a secondary explanation as well. And maybe it means more than just an instruction, because it's not used in the typical imperative instruction tone. But still, despite the fact that it's not worded as a thou shalt not, I could still read it as an instruction. In other words, the instruction is, you ensure that no factor causes these poles to ever leave, and no factor causes this choshen to ever move. In fact, look, there's a great example. When we're told initially to put the poles of the aron into, because now we're talking about not taking them out, but when we were told about putting the poles into the aron, it didn't say, you, thou shalt place poles in the aron. It said, the poles shall be in the aron. But we all understand that that's an instruction. They're not going to walk there on their own. There's no robotic arm that's going to install them back in the desert. So we know we're talking to people, and we're telling people what to do. So it is possible and acceptable and even common in context to use an expression that is not a direct thou shalt and still mean it is an instruction. But that's not the same in our case. It gets a little different when you get to our case, and that's why you have to know a little bit of Hebrew grammar for this. Here, the voweling is yikorea, which is binyan nif'al. For those people who know grammar, it's a completely passive state. We're using a verb that is completely passive. it shall not be torn. Not they shall not be removed, although it sounds a little bit, in English it doesn't come across as strongly as in Hebrew. But the binyan nif'al, this absolutely passive state, implies not the way you would talk if you were giving an instruction. So in other words, when you give an instruction, you could say, don't move those poles, or make sure those poles don't move. And here we're saying, and it shall not be torn. It's not the way you give an instruction. V'lachein, im omnom zeu tzivoi, kemoi v'lo yizach v'lo yosuru, tzorech li yois, betziva lo yikore ha-shinoi v'hisofa yoshem, yoshem ha-she betzivuyim o acherim. So therefore, you're now going to start to get the impression that if this is actually an instruction, it's a different instruction to lo yizach and lo yikorea. Here's an example. Here's an example, right? The Torah tells us, no work may be done on them, right? On the days of Yom Tov. So what does it say? It's not just that you can't do work. Nobody else can do work for you. You see, because it's nifal. Lo ye'aseh, work shall not be done. This is not about the individual. This is about the work being performed, however it lands up being performed. Well, if he's there, now, if we're going to start making that kind of a comparison, we're going to say, okay, so it's dafka in the case of the me'il, we say, lo yikorea, it may not be torn in any way. Then the implication is that if the poles of the aron are removed in any way, that's okay. Because it's only when it's in this nif'al expression, that's what it means. By no means possible should this happen. That is definitely not pshat. In other words, it's definitely not pshat to suggest that we're not concerned with the method by which the choshen moves or the poles are removed. We're concerned with you doing it as opposed to the me'il, where we're concerned about it being torn. Doesn't make sense. Therefore, Rashi has to tell us that nif'al, that passive expression, is there to teach us another detail about what lo yikorea means. Therefore, he has to tell us that over here, not identical to the other cases of lo yizach and lo yosuru, here he has to tell us that the specific language, loshen nif'al, the fact that it is in the passive, is to highlight for us that it is Nesina's time. Make sure you have a good hem so that it doesn't tear. If the Kohen's walking along and it snags on something, it will tear if it doesn't have a good hem. That's not a person doing it. So that's illustrated in the Nif'al, in the passive expression. But like the other Meforshim pointed out, because it doesn't say she, so it's not a clearly only there for the purpose of giving us an explanation. So Rashi derives that there must also therefore be a mitzvah associated with this as well, a direct instruction, do not tear the Kohen's clothes. Okay, still not clear. If the Torah wanted to give an instruction, this has got to be the most indirect way to give an instruction. How do you give the instruction? By hinting to it, by leaving out one letter that would have made it clearly only as an explanation for the behavior or the instruction that you're given. And now suddenly it's a, just tell me straight, don't tear it. Don't you expect that an instruction always has to be clear and unequivocal? Could you imagine, for argument's sake, if there was a mitzvah that said, do not murder, but it was completely convoluted? Instead of saying, do not murder, it would say something that if we pay attention to the lettering and the words, from that you could derive that, you know, no, don't kill, we want this to be clear. Don't tear the Kohen's clothing. Surely it should be clear, that's the way it is. The Gemara tells us that you have to speak b'loshen borur when you're teaching, you have to say things as they are. Rashi says, you're right. And that's why this particular reference is actually not there to tell us the core prohibition against tearing the clothing. Here it's to tell us that it actually is one of the 365 negative commandments. In other words, the fact that the words lo yikorea imply a transgression if you do tear, Here it's not intended to teach us the core principle, thou shalt not tear the me'il or any of the other garments of the Kohen Gadol. As we're about to illustrate, we know that information already before we reach this point. So we don't have to be told don't tear it because we already know don't tear it. So why is the Torah now alluding again to not tearing it? To tell you, it's not only a please don't, it's if you do, you've transgressed. That's what you see in the pshat, not the pshat just of this pasuk, the pshat of the entire story of the me'il. We construct a perspective that says here we must be talking about adding it to the list of formal 365 transgressions. Kavanas hakosav kani lichlol es ha'iser hayodua be'eresh m'shasol lo yisas v'lochei mochrach asiris kamashmo shalav. What the pasuk here is doing is telling us we know there's a behavior we're not allowed to do. Here we formalize it as one of the potential 365 transgressions. And if that's what the Torah wants to teach us, then it doesn't have to say it outright. It could allude to it. Okay, so you must be itching right now to know, where do we see that you're not allowed to tear the me'il before you get to the words that say, don't tear the me'il? Where do we know that from? Says the Rebbe, is a movement by Pashtus min HaKosev Le'il. It is self-evident from what the Torah already told us right at the beginning of the story of making Big Day Kahuna. What does the Torah say? That you should make clothing for the Kohanim that should be honorable and beautiful. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. Beged korua eino l'chavod l'sifares. If a garment has been ripped, it is no longer honorable and it's no longer beautiful. So the moment the Torah defined for us that the articles of clothing for the Kohen, any Kohen, and certainly for the Kohen Gadol, have to be beautiful and honorable, we know that you can't tear them. All I need to know is, does it actually technically count as a prohibition of the list of 365 prohibitions? That, says Rashi, the Torah alludes to here. So what do we see? We see that the primary explanation of lo yikorea is there's a reason to have a really good hem to protect the garment that it does not tear. Nifal, that it does not tear, however it may happen. In addition to which, we also have an interesting nuanced detail, because there's no shin of the word shelo yikorea, that teaches us, by the way, we already know you should never be ripping the Kohen's clothing. Now you know that it would actually transgress a law which theoretically could be punishable. Now, there's still a question you could level against this explanation. There are quite a number of places in the Torah. There are many occasions, there are a bunch of occasions in the Torah where we're told that something is prohibited, and then the Torah repeats it at a later point, and we derive from that that it's a double prohibition. So maybe that's what's happening here. Maybe it's a double prohibition when you tear a Kohen Gadol's clothes. And whenever any of those things happen, each time it's told, it's always told as a clear instruction, even if it's doubled. Now, even here, where you're saying, okay, the Torah is doing a similar thing, right? It's adding more information or more gravitas to how forbidden this behavior is. Still should have said it in the language of instruction, because that's what the Torah does. Anytime that it repeats something for added value, added insight, it repeats it still as an instruction. Why not here? Zois miyashav Rashi bilashoin oi. So Rashi addresses that. And that's where you've got to pay attention to Rashi's wording, because it's so carefully crafted. He says, "V'hakoyr oy oyver belav sheze miminyan lavin shebetoyrah." Rashi specifically says that should a person decide to go and rip the me'il, that person would transgress a negative commandment which is on the list of negative commandments. V'loy, and he does not say ve'ze miminyan lavin chulei. That if you tear it, you have transgressed, and this is one of the formal transgressions. What does he say? That it is. Hainu. Sheze miminyan lavin shebetoyrah hu ta'am al zeh sha'koyra oy oyver belav. So Rashi is telling us something really interesting over here. He's saying, actually, the only reason it is a transgression is only because it gets listed as one of the 365. So not like other areas of Torah where we already know that something is prohibited, and then later on the Torah says it to us again so that we get more further information. Rashi is actually telling us the only way we know it's prohibited, that it's one of the lavin, is from this expression. So we already knew before that obviously you don't rip the garment because it's supposed to be kavodik, but now we're learning that the act of ripping the garment is a lav, it is a prohibition because it's on the list. Interesting. Usually if the Torah repeats the same prohibition again, it's because it wants to emphasize to us that we should feel how bad it would be to do that. Whoa, something the Torah said again that I shouldn't do. You know how it is. If you keep repeating how bad something is, it's usually to make it more accessible for a person to behave that way, because, you know, oh my gosh, you've warned me about this a million times. You know, like a Jewish mother, you've warned me about this many, okay, I'll never do it. You've warned me so many times about it. So usually we're escalating the extent of how serious the sin is if we repeat it in the Torah. But let's think about that in our context. Now we're going to say, watch out, if you tear the Kohen's clothing, you have done an Avera. We don't have to scare somebody because you'd be so tempted. Really, it's so difficult to restrain yourself from ripping the Kohen's garment. So we have to warn you that you dare not do it because it's a lav. No, we're not. The Torah is not repeating itself to make it that much more onerous not to do something you'd be tempted to do, because the temptation isn't there. What the Torah wants to do over here is to actually tell you, believe it or not, that something like ripping the Kohen Gadol's me'il actually belongs on the list of prohibitions of the Torah. And here's where we get it from. And that's why it's sufficient for the Torah to tell us this information, that the tearing of the me'il, and by extension any of the Kohen's clothing, is a prohibition. I don't have to say it as an instruction, because I'm not looking to ramp up the intensity of the Savera. I'm just telling you a fact. It's a fact. It's against the Torah to do it. That's why you'll notice that Rashi doesn't even use the same expression as the Gemara, even though technically you could argue that they're probably saying the same thing. The Gemara says if somebody rips the Kohen Gadol's clothing, he gets lashes. Rashi just says he transgresses. Why? Because Rashi says we're not looking here to exaggerate the extent of what you've done wrong. So if anything, Rashi says the Torah over here is not looking to expand the extent of this particular restriction or prohibition. If anything, the Torah is looking over here to minimize it and say it's just that we're telling you it's on the list of lavin, not to make it scare tactics like you dare not ever consider doing this. But not 100% clear. Why now? Like, there's so many mitzvahs in the Torah. Why is this the one that the Torah has picked on to tell you the additional sense that it is a lav, a prohibition, just to put it on the list? Why do we never see that anywhere else?
Therefore, Rashi says, actually, it's not the only one.
Look, let's go back to the story of the Choshen. When you tell me I may not move the Choshen, same concept, you're not making it more of a serious transgression. When you tell me I'm not allowed to remove the poles of the Aron, you're not making it a more serious transgression. Why does the Torah say it? Clearly, when it's in the context of the Mishkan, for whatever reason, the Torah is happy to tell us a lav just so we know it's on the list. So why, in fact?
When you look at the story of the choshen, the breastplate, what does it say? So there the Torah describes to us that it has to be attached to this this kind of strap in order that it should be al cheshev ha'ephod, which pretty much means, you know, the kind of the centerpiece of this ephod apron that the Kohen Gadol would wear. Okay, Pirush Rashi. Rashi explains what it means is the Yosachoshen Dovuk El Cheshev HaEifoid. Umizeh Yoidim Anu Kvar Shalchoshen Yos Dovuk Shalachoshen Yos Dovuk El HaEifoid. So from the way that the Torah describes where the Choshen should be placed in the first place, we get the idea that it has to be constantly attached to the Eifoid, which is the garment that the Kohen Gadol would be wearing underneath it. Likewise, when it comes to the poles of the Aron, the Torah tells us clearly, they shall be in the Aron. Now I know the instruction. I know where they need to be. They need to be in the Aron. So I know that the Choshen has to stay put, and I know that the poles have to stay put. The fact that the Torah then adds that and says, not only is that where it should be, but it should not move. The choshen should not move. The poles of the Aron should not be removed. I now see that it's the style and purpose of the Torah speaking in the context of things of the Mishkan, which includes obviously the clothing of the Kohanim, to add to the knowledge I already have, the specific detail that they're on the list of 365 prohibited behaviors. Now that Rashi quotes those examples, it becomes more palatable for us to accept that in this case it's the same concept. That the Torah does not say she lo yikorea just to tell us that you need the hem so it doesn't rip. The Torah is actually adding for us that it is a means by which we learn it is a love. Now this Rashi gives us an incredible insight into an halachic issue. Pasako Rambam, the Rambam writes, as a halacha, hakorea pi ha-me'il loike. Any person who rips the edge of the me'il, long tunic garment of the Kohen Gadol, deserves to be given lashes. Shenemar lo yikorea, because the words, as we've seen in the pasuk, are, it shall not be ripped. And then he says, and then the Rambam says, this applies equally to all other garments of the Kohen. Any person who destructively rips any clothing of any Kohen also deserves to get lashes. So, if you read the Rambam at face value, it seems that he distinguishes between the me'il, flowing garment of the Kohen Gadol, and the ordinary clothes of the Kohen Gadol, or the other Kohanim. Because b'shar b'gdei kehuna loike rak ha'koren derech ha'shchosa, aval ha'koreh p'yamil loike b'chol oifen. According to the way the Rambam words it, any other garment of the Kohen or the Kohen Gadol, you are only liable for ripping if you did so in a destructive way, whereas the me'il, a person would be liable for ripping in any circumstance. So various of the Achronim in Chas Chinuch, the Tzafnos Paneach, they write, what's the Rambam's logic? That the fact that you may not rip the Kohen Gadol's or the Kohen's clothes is part of a larger principle, which is that we may not do to Hashem's things that which we are instructed to do to idolatrous things, lahavdil. So we are instructed to destroy idolatrous things. Don't do that to Hashem's anything. Anything from the Beis HaMikdash, anything from the Mishkan, anything from the Kohanim. Now, when are you not allowed to do it? If it is destructive. Hashchosa. Malicious intent. Whereas, when it comes to the Me'il, there, the Rambam says, there's a direct line. The Torah says clearly, lo yikorea, independently of the notion of not destroying anything which is holy, independently, you're not allowed to rip the Me'il. So therefore, if you do, you're liable for lashes. That's the way that the commentaries explain Rambam.
Rashi,
Rashi has a different approach, as we've seen. Rashi says, when the Torah says, lo yikorea, it's not to add a new prohibition. It's just to illustrate and highlight for us that the treatment of the me'il and the other big day kahuna, but here let's talk about the me'il, is such that lo yikorea, it shall not be ripped. That's now one of the prohibitions. In other words, according to Rashi, all we're doing is taking the me'il and adding it to an already known concept, which is you may not destroy the Kohanim's garments. So it's not an independent mitzvah. It is a mitzvah that is part and parcel of the greater mitzvah. Don't disrespect the Kohanim's garments. At least that's the way Rashi would explain it according to the Pshat of Chumash. What Rashi holds halachically might be a different story in Gemara, for example, but according to Pirushei ala Torah, Rashi's commentary on the Torah, it is pretty clear that Rashi, unlike the Rambam, does not distinguish the Me'il into a category of its own, because the Torah was not coming to tell us it is an independently wrong thing to do, but rather to say it's part of the Isur Lavin. It belongs on the Minyan HaMitzvahs. So it belongs on the list of things you may not do. You may not destroy a Kohen's garments, this too. Out of all of this, the Rebbe is going to derive an incredibly beautiful lesson that we can all apply in our lives. Once you start to look a little more deeply into what Rashi is saying, it is odd that Rashi quotes two proofs to his notion that the word lo yikorea, the words lo yikorea, could mean both an explanation why we design the me'il as we do and a prohibition that you dare not rip it. Why does he first quote from the lo yizach in our parasha and then lo yosuri in the previous parasha? Usually you quote sources in chronological order. Void kosha. Another question. Why does Rashi say v'chein, likewise we find v'lo yizach? And then he adds what shouldn't necessarily be there, v'chein, and likewise we find lo yosuru about the poles of the Aron. Why doesn't he just say v'chein v'lo yizach v'lo yosuru? When we say moven, shalav de lo yosuru chidash noisav agadol yosem alav de v'lo yizach. V'lochein evi Rashi lachar v'lo yizach mitam zeh hoisav shenis tevas v'chein. Rashi's building a crescendo here. He says, the fact is that our concept over here of do not rip the me'il is similar to the concept of do not move the choshen, which is quite accessible and understandable. But wait until I tell you the next thing. Lo yasuru, that you can't remove the poles of the Aron. Now that's a big chap. That's a chiddush. That's an insight we wouldn't have thought of. Why not? Vabiru goes, let's be honest. It's no big surprise that we're told, don't rip the Kohen Gadol's clothing. I mean, this is the Kohen Gadol, the most spiritual person in the community. And these are the clothing that he's going to wear inside the Beis HaMikdash, serving the Beis HaMikdash. You do not have to be the smartest person in the room to know that you don't rip the Kohen Gadol's clothing. No big surprise. Then Rashi says, not only that, but here's another example. Don't allow the choshen to shift off its position. Now this is a little bit more surprising. There's no damage to the garment if the choshen is off center. Right? If you rip the Kohen Gadol's clothing, you've done physical material damage. If the choshen is off center, okay, it's not right, but it's not damage. Says v'chein, the same thing applies. But we can understand why you shouldn't remove it. Even though it's not damaging, the Torah told us the purpose of the Choshen is to be on Aaron's heart, on the Kohen Gadol's heart. So if it's off center, it's not really doing its job. We get it. But the idea of not moving the poles of the Aaron actually seems counterintuitive. The moment you start to say that you dare not remove the poles out of the Aron, we say, why not? Makes no sense. The only purpose of the poles of the Aron surely is functional. When it's time to move, you carry the Aron using those poles. If you're not moving, who needs the poles? There were times that they camped in the desert for years on end. Who needs the poles? The Mishkan was going to stand in Shiloh for 300 and some years. Who needs the poles? The Aron was going to sit in the Beis HaMikdash for 400 some years. Who needs the poles? Why is there this mitzvah? You dare not remove the poles. In fact, logic says the mitzvah should be insert the poles when you need them. When it's time to go, put in the poles.
The fact that Rashi says v'chein, which means that there's an alignment, there's a link over here.
Rashi is indicating that it is as bad, as serious to remove those poles out of the Aron as it is to rip the me'il of the Kohen Gadol. And that's surprising. That's a chiddush. That should pique our curiosity.
So Taka, mahu ochein atam shel yosur mimenu. Why, in fact, are you not allowed to remove the poles?
So I came over by Sefer HaChinuch, the Sefer HaChinuch, which is a beautiful book that takes every parasha in the Torah and identifies which mitzvahs appear in that parasha and when they apply, how they apply. It's a brilliant work.
So he says, Nitztavinu levan nosir badei harim imenu. We're instructed to never remove the poles. Pen yetzichem latzeisim arun l'shum makim b'mehiris. If there's ever a reason to have to move the arun in a hurry.
V'olai mitoich atir devachipozen loy nivdoik yofel yos badim chazokim kol atzerech.
There's a fear that if you don't have the poles ready in the Aron and suddenly there's an emergency and you've got to move, you'll just put them in without ensuring that they're in properly and firmly. And who knows what could happen?
So he takes the attitude that as long as those poles are there, you know that it's sturdy, it's not. You're never going to have a problem.
If you have to move the Aron at short notice, you don't have to fear for Chas V'Shalom that it might fall off the poles.
That teaches us a magnificent lesson in our own spiritual lives.
As we well know, inside the Aron were the two luchos, and that is the epicenter of Torah. And that teaches us something.
When a Jewish person learns Torah, that person is comparable to the Aron, the holy ark.
That person is now the housing of Hashem's Torah.
So Yochelu loyim belibo, a person could say to himself,
if I'm supposed to dedicate time to Torah learning, that's what I'm doing right now, especially if that's my full-time occupation.
The correct way to learn Torah, and this is true, is you've got to be completely immersed and oblivious to everything else that's around you.
Right now I'm learning Torah. Why on earth would I now have to think about the spiritual well-being of another Jewish person? Right now I'm focused on my Torah.
Just like I'm not supposed to hear the news or worry about what's happening in the world, in the economy. Right now I'm learning, so I don't have to worry about the next person.
To respond to that, the Torah gives us the lesson of the poles of the Aron.
In spite of the fact that the Aron is much holier than any of us will ever be, it's in the holiest place of Kodesh HaKadoshim that's off limits to everybody except the holiest man in the nation, and even he only on the holiest day of the year.
Nevertheless, the Aron had to be ready to move. The boots were on, the poles were in the Aron. So if there's a need to go quickly, you can go, no delays.
And not only do those poles have to be there, but removing those poles is as terrible as if a person were to physically go and rip the Kohen Gadol's clothing.
And the same applies to
Torah. No matter how deeply a person chooses to immerse themselves in Torah, appropriately,
the person learning the Torah has to be ready on call, that if the Torah has got to go somewhere, you're ready to take it straight away.
And with a hurry, like the Minchas, like the Sefer HaChinuch says, like if you're going to be under pressure to move quickly, you're ready to move quickly to go where you need to go. In other words, there's no such thing as justifying that I'm so caught up in learning Torah, I cannot help another Jew. The entire purpose of learning Torah is to position us in the best possible position that at a moment's notice we can literally run out and help another Jew materially and certainly spiritually. And that's exactly the purpose of the Aron, and that's the purpose of learning Torah.